my philosophy towards this talk is a little different than most talks that I give. Not so much about delivering a particular message or content, but really, you know, as an introduction and maybe, you know, to begin a dialogue. So, you know, it's not my company, but I work at a company, AER, and also I'm an appointment in the Department of Civil Environmental Engineering at MIT. But I'm involved with making an operational seasonal forecast. So I guess I kind of knew that there, you know, there are differences in summer versus winter forecasts, but I thought, you know, maybe it'd be of interest here. And I did a little bit of analysis, not totally in depth, but hopefully the information is useful and or at least somewhat provocative. Large climate scale modes, and some of it was discussed, you know, in this symposium, but these large scale climate modes that are referred to as teleconnection patterns, they're important in winter, but not so much in summer. So we can optimize these, you know, in winter predictions, we can optimize predictions of these teleconnection patterns, such as, and we'll discuss these two that I have up here actually were discussed this morning, so that was good, both ENSO and the NAO. I'm going to try to show you, at least convince you in a few slides, this works well in winter, but really doesn't work so well in summer. And rather, if we want to optimize summer forecasts, it takes a different strategy. And we have to really better knowledge of the local conditions, such as soil moisture and even persistence. And I'll give my talk, give me 2 minutes heads up. If I have time, I'll finish with some real-time forecasts. So, again, when people were talking about ENSO, and again, I apologize, this is a very Northern Hemisphere-centric talk, but I think the big ideas are applicable to both hemispheres. So we've talked about ENSO, and here's an animation from NOAA about the sea surface temperature anomalies here in the equatorial Pacific, and you can see looks like it wants to warm up, and there's this anticipation of an El Nino for this upcoming winter, and that's really what what's most relied on in making seasonal forecasts, and I think that's certainly applicable to both hemispheres. So here's a skill map of winter forecasts, and this comes from the ECMWF. So the darker the blue, the better the forecast. When you start getting to lighter blues and then the yellows and reds, the worse off the forecast is. And so here's that El Nino region, that ENSO region, and you can see the best skill really on the whole globe is in that ENSO region. I think a lot of the resources have been focused on getting ENSO right because the thinking is if you can get ENSO right, then we can just basically forecast the world. But, and again, maybe my biases are coming through a little bit, but you can see that in the tropics there are a lot of the darker blues and skill is better. But when you get outside of the tropics, and this is for both the southern and northern hemisphere, but again, my talk is of the northern hemisphere, there's really no skill. The model really has almost no skill. And this is a little bit of an old map. I'm not convinced that this is really qualitative change. And just like to point funny, CMWF, their mandate is to forecast for Europe, and the model has the worst skill in the whole globe is right there in Europe. So here's those two big patterns we saw with the NAO and ENSO. So on the left is a correlation, just a straight correlation of an ENSO index. I think it's 3.4, with temperatures. This is for temperatures. So that and on the right is using an AO or NAO, the Arctic Oscillation Index, and looking at temperature. And everything that's shaded is statistically significant. So again, ENSO is what is mostly used. I mean, this is the workhorse of seasonal forecasting, and here's for the winter season. And you can see there's some good skill here in the Pacific Ocean, but when you get into the land regions. And the skill is very little statistically significant skill. There's some here in the Western North America, even the Southeast, which is as you saw the CPC forecast. I mean, they always have confidence forecasting there, but it's really not much skill using statistics. And that, and I think the AO makes a very nice contrast to using ENSO, because now the skill is really not so much in the oceans, but it's really on the, in the land areas, and it's in areas that ENSO doesn't have a skill. So, the big one is Northern Eurasia. If you knew the AO, it certainly would really help and improve making a temperature forecast in the winter for Eurasia. But even the Eastern U.S., and certainly I think people recognize, and it was mentioned that, you know, there has a strong, the temperatures in the Eastern U.S., especially the Southeastern U.S., have strong sensitivity to the NAO. So if you knew the AO or the NAO, the winter NAO in advance, it would certainly help you make a good forecast. I mean, it's just one piece of your puzzle. I mean, and it doesn't guarantee a correct forecast, but certainly knowing that AO. The point is about winter versus summer, and what we hope you'll take away is that you've got these large patterns of co-variability, and if you knew this teleconnection pattern, which, you know, is hemispheric in scale, whether it be ENSO or ENSO global in scale, but NEO, which is hemispheric in scale, I mean, you can make a forecast for large regions of the extratropical landmass, let's say. And then that was for temperature, and then for precipitation. Now, I think the story switches a little bit when you compare ENSO and NEO for precipitation. I mean, so AO really was much better if you want to make a temperature forecast, but for precipitation, I think ENSO looks a little more impressive. But again, these coherent patterns, you get this nice signal here along the southern U.S., but especially in the southeastern U.S., and then it feeds the Atlantic Jet with ENSO. U.S. is not much signal here from in the precipitation, much stronger CFMSO, but there is a very good signal in Europe. And if you knew the AR, NEO, you can do a really good job in predicting precipitation patterns or anomalies in Europe. But so again, these are winter, and I'm about to move into summer, but you can see that these large scale patterns of covariability and that can be capitalize on in making a forecast. And if you do the same thing, so here's the temperatures, right? So, it just looks like random blotches. I mean, there's this point here in Eurasia. I don't believe it's real. But, I mean, there's really no, so ENSO is on the left and the AO is on the right, and especially, which is maybe very especially striking, is the AO. If you knew the AO value, or the ENSO value exactly for the summer, if you could predict that, it really wouldn't gain you much. There's no, because there isn't this large scale, very large scale covariability. And so the one method or strategy that work in the winter would completely fall apart, in the summertime. So you have to use, something different. Now that was for temperatures, and then for precipitation. Again, ENSO looks very blotchy, and I don't believe there's anything real here. There's really nothing physically coherent. The same thing with the AO. I mean, the only region that looks like you would have good forecasts is for the Arctic. But otherwise, the AO, and even ENSO, I think in the summer, really don't, even perfect knowledge, which is impossible, even perfect knowledge really wouldn't get you much of a accurate or what we're looking for, a skillful forecast. So here's a list of tools that we use for making winter and summer forecasts. So certainly like everybody else, we use El Nino, and that affects the temperatures in the equatorial Pacific, and then it has this downstream effect where it impacts the jet stream and the currents of ridges and troughs. And that's what everybody uses, I think, without exception, in making a seasonal forecast. And if I have some time, I'll talk a little about, we've tried to take a different approach or enhance the ENSO forecast and use snow cover. And we've had this two different indices. The most recent one's called the Snow Advance Index. But just the thinking is, if you have extensive snow cover, this is leads to more cold air masses in the wintertime. And the Northern Hemisphere mid-latitudes tend to have colder winter is when the snow cover, and this is the key month is October, and maybe talk about it more, should have a few minutes, I think. besides snorkel, we have these atmospheric precursors. If you can recognize a certain pattern, that then will also help you make these, these patterns that occur in the fall. You can then use those patterns to make a prediction of how much time? A
couple of minutes.
Just a couple of minutes. Okay. And something that's got a lot of attention, at least I think in my circles, sea ice and less sea ice has started to weaken the way, for everybody's maybe more familiar now, especially in the U.S., about the term of the polar vortex, but the sea ice is supposedly, if there's less sea ice, that weakens the polar vortex. And, similar I was discussing with the snow cover, when the polar vortex is weak, you get these more cold air outbreaks. But for summer, you have to use, I think you really require different forecasting tools. And this is not just, we use a statistical model, but I think this is true for both statistical and dynamical. And I got a typo here, quickly added that in during the previous talks, But, whether it's a dynamical or forecast, so I do believe that the tools are the same. So one thing that I don't think will get you much, buy you much in winter, but I think is much more important in the summer is persistence. That if you could, once you get into a certain pattern, summer seems to be self-sustaining. And so if you, extrapolating recent past into the future, I think is an important tool. We've had some talks and a lot of talks here throughout the conference that we've talked about, the trends and climate change. And here's just a kind of maybe dated, but picture of temperatures. But we all know that temperatures have been increasing, and this can be capitalized in, into improving forecasts. And I do think a lot of the skill that people have shown, improvements in skill really have only just come out of the fact that every year it gets warmer than the previous year, and so that's really added to a lot of the skill that we see in seasonal forecasts. Soil moisture, I guess something that everybody here is familiar with. So, but in summer, if you have a dry soil, that then the heating from the sun right has to go. There's no latent heating, but it's all sensible heating, so you warm up the temperature. So, but if you have a wet soil, then that heating goes into latent heating and not sensible heating, so you have a cooler temperatures. Again, El Nino, is used. Everybody uses, is always, the go-to forecast. But as I guess I just showed, I really think that it's very questionable to use any very large-scale teleconnection pattern making a summer forecast. So I only have a few minutes. So as part of introduction, the thing that I've really worked on is trying to improve these winter forecasts, and I'd like to do the same with summer. But the idea that I've worked on is that using snow cover and kind of just a quick cartoon. I like to say Siberia is a refrigerator from the northern hemisphere. So I was using a lot of snow cover over across Siberia. This leads to a rapid development of the Siberian High, and here you can kind of see the Siberian region. And then you have these mountain passes that actually ring around the Siberian region to the east and to the south. So you build up these, if you have a lot of snow, you build up snow cover, you get these cold, dense highs that it's easier to spread west into Europe and north over the North Pole to North America. And then you have these Arctic highs building across northern Canada, and you get a favorable jet position that could lead to these cold air outbreaks, similar to what happened last year. And less snow cover means just the opposite. So I'm pretty much out of time. So I was going to show some examples of this was at 2010-11, and here was the forecast actually I presented on the right. It was at a prediction workshop, appropriately enough, in October, and this was the actual forecast. And and here, so again, here's the observed. Here was the forecast that we made, and here's the IRI forecast, and you can see quite a bit different. And there was that La Nina. That really warmed it for the U.S. that didn't actually materialize. But get to the and here's that. Here's a plot of the NME. People talk about these multi-model ensemble. Here's this for this past summer. Anyway, so didn't really talk about it. Just a minute. Snow cover. It can be used to really, I think, improve winter forecasts. Especially, it gives you the possibility of predicting the North Atlantic Oscillation or the Arctic Oscillation. And this has resulted, in, I think, in much more accurate temperature predictions for the Northern Hemisphere winter temperatures. For summer forecasts, the predictors need to be more local, which I feel is much more challenging. But I think progress is being made. And then, as other people have said the same thing, our precipitation is even more difficult than temperature, and this is it remains a challenge. And I would just, you know, again, you know, I'm here more as an introduction than really try to deliver something terribly profound, but if anybody would like to talk to me later, thank you.
Thanks.
I don't know.